NFL podcast. Looks better than Gronk in a turtleneck.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Greg Rosenthal, and I am here in a room overstuffed with heroes. Mark Sessler, Chris Wesseling, and back in the studio, Patrick Claibon.
Yes. It must be the offseason, baby. We're here.
Yeah. I didn't want to say it. Because it's not really, it's not right. It's not fair that infers things that aren't true, Patrick Claibon. But Dan Handis, our great host, is with his family near the coal mines right now. And who would we ask first, you know, for the first, you know, to kick off the offseason than Patrick Claibon?
Well, I mean, the joke would be that you would ask several people.
No, but we didn't. We haven't had you in the studio since you've been, you know, rocking a very thick, dark beard. There's a lot been going on.
You have
on,
a new look, and it's going very well for you. And
thank you.
People seeing you on television can't help but comment when they observe.
Yeah, I think it's because I was so boring probably before, and that's why, and that was the inspiration. It was like, wow, I'm nearly invisible. And so I didn't shave out of sheer laziness and just I was in a dark place.
Wow.
Now you feel seen.
Yeah, I feel seen. I see why people like do things and wear fancy clothes and everything because people.
Greg did not grow a beard because he thought he was boring. That I can promise you.
That reminds me of a theory I heard someone say about a relatively prominent person. I'm not going to say who that wears a mustache. And someone basically just said, like,
well, now I'm trying to figure out who
if they wear a mustache, it's kind of like a giveaway. Like, people that have mustaches, they don't have anything else going on, that they just kind of have this mustache because it's like, hey, there's something different about me. Like, they're ultimately hiding an empty vessel.
In 2020, we're not talking 1968 or something.
Feels like a lot to read in to a mustache, but. Okay.
Sweeping generalization to some degree.
These are the types of things you can think about in the off season, like that we can just take a little breath and contemplate what facial hair. Don't you guys feel better, Mark and Wes? Like,
no,
right now than like last week.
Yeah. I mean, in what sense?
Or just then Monday even? Yeah.
Oh,
it's
yes.
Night and day.
I thought you were asking a deeper question.
No, I mean feel better, like. Not like a weight's off our shoulders, but it's just like suddenly you're just in this other lane of human existence and mental thinking that it wasn't the case a week ago.
We've talked about this a few times, and it weighs
Greg's
on
underselling it.
He is right. Underselling. The sun shines a little bit brighter because it's like, oh, we don't have 18 game previews to take, you know, dense notes for this week. There's nothing to preview. There's nothing to talk about. I don't even know what we're doing here.
No,
we have a lot. Come on.
I am a better human being. I'm a better husband. I'm a better friend. I'm a better brother.
Right.
I'm a better person when it's the off season.
Yeah.
I'm a better father.
Maybe.
I think I might be the exact same. I don't know.
Well, you're good all the time. We go up and down more.
Yeah.
You're good all the time.
Well, there's less people in the parking lot.
Right, that's cool. Good. You get better. No, that's true. You get better parking.
That's tangible.
Yeah. When you have a position like I do here, and it's based on what happens to the important people above me, so the off season happens, and they're gone,
and
you're
so busier.
I'm working more, and so it's like I this is it. Like I'm a shark, and I'm swimming, and this is my time. This is when. This is when I can get in here and move around. Wear shorts to work, do some things,
nice.
Make some moves.
No, I feel you. Dan and I, for the first time ever, we did a NFL Now hit on Tuesday, and you were the host, Patrick. So you were in one chair, Dan was in another, and I was in another, all in three different buildings, which is a ridiculous thing to begin with. But they would never be asking for our takes on like Hall of Fame if anyone else was willing to show up to work that day. You know, like if it was the regular season, that would never.
There was
never
be there the were case. A rangy multiple humble brags within that last paragraph or two by Greg, but well, nothing's changed.
It's there's only so many things that can change in the off season. We've got a good show. We've got a segment cooked up by Mark Sessler, which I think is important, and it's gonna
to some degree.
It's gonna show what our goals are for our personal growth. Like how we can grow as humans and as people in this off season, and maybe and somehow some NFL figures can grow as well. You know, they always like, oh, Michael Jordan, he would come back from the break and he'd have a whole new fall away. It's like he's always
that's not a trope that actually happened,
right? But this is we're gonna try to create our own little follow-up.
There will be an NFL angle to it for people thinking they can jump on the episode 22 minutes from now.
Which, with the Jordan comp, we would need to be obsessive about something we were already really good at.
Right.
Right.
And then, like, be mean to people.
We got to add something to the arsenal, and maybe some NFL figures add something to the arsenal. And we got a decent amount of news because there's some catching up to do from last week. There's some post Super Bowl fallout. We got some awards and Hall of Fame talk. We never really got into that. We might as well just do it. Ricky, a little bit of news.
You ready?
I talked to El Presidente Mark Donovan. He made sure he was okay with the run. I mean, the Clark family, everybody involved. Because of this season, because of y'all.
That was Travis Kelce, the Chiefs tight end. And Erica, you got to have something ready. I don't know if you remember that, by the way. You got to have something that you want to grow personally this offseason.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, so think about that. Travis Kelce, he might want to think about working on that speech a little bit more. Like, he had a lot of pressure on him because his brother had probably the greatest victory parade speech of all time, and there was a lot of talk going into it, and you could feel him working for something at the parade that didn't quite happen.
It was too much pressure, right? It was a lot to live up to. It was Philadelphia. He's wearing a wacky Shriners.
You were
outfit.
Working this event somewhat, right? So you were on top of it.
Well, I was just from a spectator standpoint, I was watching it on my way out of the door, and it was so much because Patrick, he was honest, you know, his voice was shot after all of his availabilities after the Super Bowl. And so it's like, well, here's this tight end. He's gonna finish up. He's batting cleanup on the speeches. And you can hear his voice. He's labored. Like, here's a guy we've seen run over people and jump over guys. And he's struggling to get words out. And he landed the plane ultimately at the end. But
he was going for like a big WWE theme. He had a whole thing. It reminded me a lot of the first best man speech I gave. At my friend Dave's wedding, and I got up there and I thought I was gonna be great, and suddenly it was like humming a.
You're like 8 seconds in.
This is one of the worst experiences of my life. I did a terrible job.
There were a lot of people complaining about one element, beer. I think that there was an element of drunkenness to the Chiefs that some people in the Midwest that I just noticed on Twitter. I know, Wes, I noticed that you were live tweeting this event, too. This is one of your favorite days of the year, next to the visiting the White House celebration. But it does remind me also, there was a time in college when, like, there was some event that was late to unfold, and they're like, hey, man, can you just get up on stage and, like, kind of light up the crowd for 15, 20 minutes? And, like, something from deep within me was like, don't say yes to this. And then they found some other total rube to get up on stage, and he failed utterly. And I was like, that would have been me. This job, you don't go up and do that unless you know you're going to nail it. And Kelce,
I think he thought,
like,
he was going to nail it, but
he
then realized halfway through it was not going to happen.
He was also, did he seem slightly hammered, or is it just me? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. But
I think it's safe to say
they were celebrating.
He was influenced by something.
There's been a decent amount of news kind of coming out. I guess this happens after every Super Bowl. Some relatively interesting stuff. Tom Pelissero said that the Chiefs are going to try to figure out how to keep Sammy Watkins, which maybe this wouldn't have made it to our news portion of the program. But I felt like we sold Sammy Watkins short on the recap show. It's like Sammy Watkins just completed an incredible postseason, almost 100 yards in the Super Bowl, almost 100 yards per game. He's now had about 5 games for the Chiefs in the playoffs, and he's averaging about 100 yards per game. Sammy Watkins, I put this out on Twitter, and I'm getting ratioed, is the new Eli Manning. You know? It's like he's just kind of there and a little overpaid, a little overrated during the regular season, and then he's clutch, and he wins Super Bowls for you. If we're going to give Eli Manning some love, give it to Sammy.
It sounds like you have Sammy Watkins. You believe you have Sammy Watkins figured out, and I believe I can't. He's one of the hardest guys to figure out in the NFL. I feel like he should be a great player every year, every game. And he's a great player about 25% of the time. And the other 75% of the time, I'm wondering where he is.
He's not retiring. That was the other item of the news. Is he had mentioned maybe retiring, and he will not be retiring.
To his benefit, when you're in the Super Bowl and you're one-on-one with Richard Sherman, you get a nice inside release. People are going to remember that. You get 38 yards. I don't know if they win the game without that play. And so
114 yards in the AFC Championship last year, 114 yards in the AFC Championship this year.
Well, hold it. So he's made essentially $54 million and the key memorable moments are infrequent for that amount of money. And he is someone that weeks ago was talking about leaving football altogether. So I find it to be an intriguing task on what you pay him and how much you commit to him.
Isn't Eli the highest paid quarterback in NFL history?
Right. That's, I guess it's just funny how, like, if you're not a quarterback, it's like, usually it's just if you do it in the playoffs, people love you.
Yeah. Mike Glennon's got $26 million career-wise.
He didn't do anything in the playoffs. He didn't do anything in the regular season. They would probably have to cut Watkins' salary. I don't know if he would want to do that. I think he is due $21 million is his cap hit next year. That's a lot of money.
And no slight against Sammy. DeMarcus Robinson's a really good football player, and I think more volume, more opportunity for him would help out. I think he's
Nicole Hardman.
He's up against it, too. Contract-wise.
I've been interested to see the 49ers fall out. Kyle Shanahan had a press conference Thursday, that's today, as we're taping this, said he would not change any of his play calls, said it's different than the Falcons one where he went back and looked and thought there was a lot of things he would do different, said there's really no play call he would do different, and that he wouldn't have handled the end of the first half any differently either. Thought that not taking a timeout there was a no-brainer, in his words.
Whatever helps you sleep at night, buddy.
You're raising your eyebrows, Wes.
I don't believe him for a second.
He looks a little haunted. He said he's watched the game like 1,000 times, which is just has to be a haunted.
So he's trying to convince himself he did the right thing. And maybe he succeeded in convincing himself for now, but it's going to keep him up late at night this offseason.
The play calls, I believe him. The timeouts, that's
right.
The timeouts, I mean, we saw that Chiefs offense score 7 consecutive touchdowns. We saw what they did in the fourth quarter. They had 3 timeouts. It's how Kyle Shanahan feels about his quarterback. I'm picking that out from his comments. I called good plays.
Well, that's what he said about Jimmy Garoppolo is interesting, too. He said, I feel the same about Jimmy Garoppolo after the Super Bowl as I did before.
Well, that's an interesting
way to say the truth, but I don't know.
Well, I think I view that as sticking up for Jimmy G, where everyone's down on Jimmy G, to not that differently than they were, you know, a year ago with Jared Goff, where Jimmy G's stock has shot through the floor because it's the most analyzed game of the year in any sport, and that's going to happen. But I don't have a problem with him not wanting to give the ball back to the Chiefs at the end of that half. I just don't. But I think that he would have done everything the same? No. But what part of his thing was he game planned for this for 2 weeks, and he wouldn't have changed anything that he prepared before the game at all.
There was no crazy play calls.
They were up by 10 in the fourth quarter.
I get it on that. There were plays to be made, and you know, no one's bringing up the defense. There's no rule that the defense has to give up 21
points. It was unusually conservative for Kyle Shanahan.
Right, it went against his character.
They threw 8 passes in the game before. I'm not convinced it was super conservative when they initially got the ball and the drive they scored on before that. I'm thinking to myself, do they have enough time to score they've been moving the ball?
Here's the thing, though, with the way he even explained it, saying not taking timeout was a no-brainer. I'll buy that. But then you had the ball with 58 seconds and 3 timeouts. Your offense at that point had been gaining 7.6 yards per play. I mean, that's dominant. You are handling the Chiefs' defense. There's no reason to get the ball and expect your team to go have a 3-and-out when you're playing great on offense. It's just like a cautious way of thinking. There's no reason to expect you to start failing when the evidence is showing you that your offense has an advantage. And okay, it's 58 seconds left. That's plenty of time for them to go score. But the thing that bothered me is he ran the ball up the middle 2 plays in a row and was just hoping to get to halftime. He was not trying to score.
It stopped all of us in the press box.
He wasn't doing what was come naturally to him. He was doing what he was thinking extra hard about, which made him cautious.
That's the Mahomes effect on people. They make people do crazy things.
Well, I mean, you saw it on 3rd and 15, which is a play that is central to the game, along with those Chris Jones tip passes. But those things don't happen, and as much as we notice it in the time, we're just not talking about the end of the first half. You know, like in the grand scheme of the game, it just wouldn't matter because the 49ers would have the trophy. But the Chiefs made plays at the end of the game, and the 49ers didn't make.
You're the team with all the what ifs, so we're digging back through the game, and that sticks out.
It's true. I do think the coaches, and especially in this case, tend to take a little too much of the criticism, and I've been guilty of doing that. Compared to just like it's ultimately about the players and the players mostly win and lose the game, and the Chiefs made
it. If he can get your sign off, Craig, on a situational, you know,
I think it was
the
wrong choice, but I
think
the reaction to it is maybe just, and was part of that in our recap show, was just a little outsized compared to all the other things.
Well, that's what this game does, and we've talked about this. It's the reason that Andy Reid was criticized unfairly for 15 years.
I get it. Maybe that's the players too, but you got to be able to do a 2-minute drive in less than 7 minutes.
Well, next year when we do the Thursday pod after the Super Bowl, instead of doing all this, what did the losing coach and players do wrong?
Yeah.
Let's just do 10 minutes on randomness.
Or what the winning team did right.
I'm not saying randomness.
No, I mean that.
I'm not saying, and we could.
We could have a good, smart conversation about vicissitudes and randomness.
I think one of the things would be that Jimmy Garoppolo, you mentioned Chris Jones. Now, some of those are just good plays by Chris Jones. Some of them is just you play that game a bunch of times, and it's never going to happen again. Four passes batted down at the line of scrimmage. Jimmy G had 6 the entire season. The lowest of any quarterback who had thrown as many as he did. So he had almost as many in that game as the entire rest of the season. And you're right, that did change the game. It did. Emmanuel Sanders said he's watched the game 5 times too. That just seems unhealthy.
That's 4 more than I.
Looking for he said he was looking for a different ending, like watching the Titanic sinking, which
that's it's got to be tough.
That's not how recorded events work.
Maybe that's the only way you move past it, but I just he's a stronger man than I think I could ever be. Let's move on past the Super Bowl. Let's talk a little Tom Brady. We did not speak about the report, and Ian Rappaport, our guy, has followed it up a few times, that the Patriots are willing to pay Tom Brady $30 million or more, which I think is very significant. Also reported by Ian was that the Chargers would show some interest, and then and reported by ESPN is that if Tom Brady made it to the free agent market, that the Raiders would be expected to show a ton of interest. And all that's fine, but once I heard Ian say the Patriots are willing to pay him $30 million, I kind of was like, that's a wrap. Like, he's coming back to the Patriots
nice
if
pun.
That's true. Ooh, not on purpose.
Well, it never made sense to me that this was – for all of the prime of his career the last decade, he didn't care about money. He took pay cuts so the team could be stronger. All of a sudden at age 43, he's greedy and he only wants to be about money and you better pay me. And Mike Giardi's report makes a lot more sense to me that he cares much more about them upgrading the weapons around him than breaking the bank on this contract.
Yeah, I'm with you. The idea of a money grab when you're within the marriage family structure that he's in, money is not the first.
Question with him as these reports and weeks have gone on is, what is the level of interest in the Patriots, especially Bill Belichick, in bringing Tom Brady back? So the idea that they would pay him $30 million would indicate to me it's high. It's high and they're going to bring him back. I didn't know that. And I feel like Ian, I thought there was like a chance they would go Stidham and Teddy Bridgewater or something like that. I really did.
I think it has to do with what else is out there. And like Andy Dalton is that's nice that people like to connect the dots and put Andy Dalton in New England and all this stuff.
He's doing that.
No, it's out there. There's little mentions of maybe Andy Dalton would be a fit for the Patriots. There is immense exhaustion around this entire topic. It cannot be sealed up quickly enough. Either figure it out, just figure it out. Figure out where you're going to go. I don't want to hear another report about it.
Claybon wants to jump in. I know he's not into the whole like taking less money for the team narrative with Brady.
Well,
what else is he taking it for?
I mean, I don't want to get too far in the conspiracy theories, but I think Tom Brady is being compensated to the amount that he needs to be to play for the New England Patriots.
He owns a company that is running and is operational, and you can go to today at
Patriot Place.
Patriot Place. So that's not a conspiracy. That is, I don't know how that plays into your conspiracy.
But I do think in terms of what Tom Brady wants – Tom Brady wants to be wanted by the New England Patriots. I think he's a guy that's obsessed with the way he's perceived by the people that he works with. And if they are willing to give him $30 million, then that says, Tom, we want you.
Right.
We don't want Jared Stidham. We don't want Andy Dalton. We don't want, hypothetically, Cam Newton. We want you. We love you, Tom.
And by
we will work out with your doctor. We will sell your wares feet away from the stadium. We love you.
I mean, it's Bill.
You are everything to
us. Bill. It's Bill Belichick. He knows Robert Kraft wants him. He knows New England wants him. He knows Josh McDaniels wants him. It's the whole thing of, does Bill Belichick still want me? Does he still want him? I mean, this is a guy, Bill Belichick, who was ready to move forward with Jimmy Garoppolo. Of everything that came out of the whole Deflategate and that whole drama with Jimmy G and after that, the one, I think, salient point to me as a Patriots fan was Belichick was very ready to just move forward with Jimmy Garoppolo. And so that's in Tom Brady's mind a couple of years later, I would imagine, that this guy might not want me. I still am not really sure, but it might not be Bill Belichick's decision. It might be Robert Kraft's decision. Let's move on. Todd Gurley is like waiting for Dan to come in. Todd Gurley is going to meet with the Los Angeles Rams, according to Ian and Tom Pelissero. They reported this on NFL Now to discuss all options about his future. Mark, what options do you think that could be? That could mean?
Well, I mean, there were reports out there. Not a report. Someone speculated that the team wanted to find a way to trade him. I'm sure they'd love to trade him. You're not going to find a trade partner for the amount of money he's making, and he has a guaranteed $8 million, $7.55 million roster bonus landing on March 20th. And I would imagine with the immense money tied up with him over, it's not just a year or two, down the road, deep down the road, that they, do you restructure? Are you angling to try to convince Gurley that this, are you going to cut him? You cut him and it is a wild cap hit.
It doesn't seem like it would make any sense to cut him because you would just be paying as much money to cut him, if not more, I think more.
So it's not status quo, though. You don't talk to him about that.
But it's this whole thing of like he is a superstar. He's been important to them. And there's the health aspect, the usage, which he wasn't thrilled about at some. There's a lot going on there, but I don't know what options they really have. I feel like they don't have any options.
Well, why talk? What are they talking to him about?
Right. That's what I'm asking.
It could be anything, right?
Well,
they could be discussing.
I think it's about money.
They said his future. They said his future and his status with the team. So that would indicate that his status with the team is not guaranteed.
Which is weird.
No one's going to trade.
Considering where we came from, where we were in that run to the Super Bowl where he was hurt. I mean, we could see clearly he was hurt and he was still playing through it. And it doesn't seem like he's recovered from that since. Hmm.
I mean, I think someone could talk to Les Snead about some of the contracts being handed out by the Rams in general. There are some numbers around certain players that are hamstring. You know, I know I get it that the cap is bigger than the planet Jupiter at this point. Just pay everyone everything. But this contract stands out as extremely messy.
Gurley's does. I have no problem really with the Goff one. And so that's the only one that I think the Gurley.
Well, there was a time when they extended Tavon Austin for doing literally nothing other than underperforming and being overdrafted.
They were just like, they needed a little juice for that season of Hard Knocks, which was kind of a snoozer.
Yeah, that was before things were going great.
Exactly. Like, I'm just saying there is a history of overpaying. Like, you have a nice year and then bang, you get overpaid. I know we're not supposed to say anything about the Rams on this show, so I will curtail my thoughts.
That is
at this
like
point.
In your head. You can.
No, it's not.
We've said whatever you want. You can say whatever you want.
So after a bunch of running backs got paid, are we right back to where we were, that running backs shouldn't get paid anymore?
I think Derrick Henry is
going to find
out the hard way. Yeah. Not that they shouldn't, but that it might be tough for him to – I don't think he's getting a Todd Gurley type of contract, which is what he indicated he would want.
Well, if you read into his interview with Rich Eisen, he misunderstood what Eisen was saying about Zeke Elliott being the floor. Mm. He thought Eisen meant Zeke Elliott has the floor right now. Like, he has the floor. He's the running back who has all the money. But I don't think Derrick Henry's going to get near what Zeke Elliott got.
There's got to be a carve-out in the CBA or something specifically for running backs. In terms of the way that they're paid, you come in as a rookie, you can get run into the ground, and you will never get another opportunity.
It's
just different than any other position.
It is sort of unfair that the best parts of their career are while they're not getting paid that much. And I think they went too far with the rookie wage scale last time. I mean, everyone was saying how it's like great for the NFL, and rookies kind of got, I mean, rookies though, I like, there's so many players that are so underpaid, and the teams actually aren't spending that cap space anyways. They're just saving it, or they're giving it to mid-level veterans. And a lot of these rookies, especially if they're a first rounder, they only, it's like Patrick Mahomes in theory, I mean, he's a different case. But in theory, well, he's like under contract for $2 million next year.
Well, it's great because it wiped out us having to track super yes. tedious
that
holdouts.
That part was good, but like, I think they went August. A little too far where the rookies are
right.
underpaid.
You mentioned mid-level veterans, but they're right there beside running backs as the other group that got right. hurt by this CBA.
Because, why pay six, seven, eighth-year guys when you can take a shot, draft some guys that you don't have to pay for 4 years?
I agree that should be something that the NFLPA should be actively working to fix, helping the mid-level veterans.
You know who is getting paid, at least for another extra couple years? Anthony Lynn, the Chargers
sick.
Head coach. Contract extension kind of slipped out there. It's one of those vague ones where it says at least 2021. So it might have been just getting 1 year tacked on to his previous deal. We don't know the details of it. But either way, they're moving into the stadium, giving Anthony Lynn a little vote of confidence, which I think was important because you weren't quite totally sure where his status was. And I think you're seeing with Rivers gone in Florida and likely gone for good and Anthony Lynn staying, like that was a pretty clear message, I think, from their ownership. I know you're an Anthony Lynn fan, Claybon.
Yeah, I think Coach Lynn is honest with us, and that's what I enjoy when you have a coach that will answer questions. It doesn't feel like he has to mind trick you or run through platitudes exclusively. And I'm excited for what the Lynn vision of the Colt of the Chargers is, because I'm not sure we've seen it here.
It might be Tyrod starting week one, but I really hope. Now that I've gotten this totally speculative, irresponsible idea into my head, I'm really going to run it into the ground as much as I can. I'm totally into the Cam Newton Chargers week one. Forget trying to get Tom Brady. You're going to have a 43-year-old for 1 year or whatever. Like, they are the team that should just give up a little too much for Cam Newton and take a huge risk. Quarterbacks are impossible to get. You're not going to get one without taking a huge risk. I would rather take one on Cam Newton, then take one on whoever you're going to get with number six, or figuring out, you know, let's make Tyrod work or whatever. All due respect to Tyrod. Cam Newton as a Los Angeles Charger opening that stadium, there's some juice.
Yeah, I think one thing happening here, reading like what Tom Telesco had to say, is that the GM likes the coach. They get along really well, and
yes.
So you don't just blow that up. And also, this is a team in a particularly unusual situation compared to any other team in the league. You're going to need buy-in from your coach to go into a stadium where you're probably going to have 25,000 fans and maybe 25,000 empty seats and 40,000 visiting fans or whatever. I don't know. That adds up to more seats that are in that stadium. But, I mean, if Lynn wants in and he's bought into this project, like, you don't jump ship right now.
It's good stability. Telesco's been there since 2013. For a team that is kind of all over the place in terms of where they're playing and everything like that, they actually have a lot of stability.
They're on a collision course with apathy. So they need to do something.
They have a talented team, though. But
right,
you're right.
But who cares if they win or lose? Literally.
We do.
What percentage of
the
NFL...
They don't have
what
fans.
What percentage of NFL fans care whether the Chargers win or lose?
Right. They shipwrecked their fan base, and
less
this is the result.
By far less than any other fan base.
This bomb that Greg has planted in my brain, and I guess everybody that's listening now...
The Cam one?
Yeah. It's unstoppable. It's in there, and it...
Here's the thing with I think the Panthers should keep Cam, and my guess is they will, if I had to guess, because he sort of fits what you would think would want to do. But what they had, the Panthers have made it, they have not made any statement whatsoever that like Cam's our guy, and until they do, it kind of makes you know think that they would listen at least, and I you would think that they would listen to an aggressive offer.
They punted on Greg Olsen so fast.
That's right.
Like, well, this would be the time of year where, like, a new coaching staff is looking at
right.
Panthers tape for the first time, so they may not have a decision.
Right, that's fair. Keekly's gone. Olsen's gone. Thomas Davis has been gone for a little while. It's a different Panthers organization. Let's, before we move on to a little afternoon delay, quickly go over just the awards. Maybe this is unnecessary. Wes, what do you think? Am I doing a good job putting together the show, even throwing awards talk into it? I just feel like we talk awards a lot during the season, and then the MVP was given out. Lamar Jackson, unanimous. Coach of the Year was given out. John Harbaugh had about double the votes of Kyle Shanahan. I think they made the right call. That would have been my 1-2 in that order as well.
Question would you like me to answer?
Well, I'm getting to it. And then we get to...
Greg's looking for a mid-show grade.
Yeah, right. We get to, you know, it actually happening. We don't have anything to say about it. Or should we talk about it? That's my question.
You lost me somewhere along the way. Are you asking me how you're doing or whether
I'm asking if we needed to put this into the show or not, the awards doc. Kyler Murray, Offensive Rookie of the Year, for instance.
That might be the only one that I would quibble with. While I'm very happy for the Arizona Cardinals that Kyler Murray is their quarterback and he was exciting to watch, he was not one of the top half of quarterbacks in the league. And Josh Jacobs, for a long time, was one of the top six or seven running backs in the NFL. He was a difference maker. As far as wins and losses and carrying that team for a while, I would have given it to him.
I looked at the rest of the list, and I mean, not that this stuff would keep me up at night to begin with, but I didn't have a single complaint because I feel like talking about...
What day did you look at this list?
Oh, it was today. No, but I heard little whispers, you know, like as we were traveling around.
Sources
you know,
were reporting that
yeah.
LeVar won the MVP.
But no, I think they did. They did a good job with Ryan Tannehill as comeback because I think we always agree that that award is so murky. But his story to me is a comeback story because he's completely changed his earning ability and what we think about.
I would have liked Darren Waller, but I'll accept Ryan
that
Tannehill.
Works too.
It seemed to me because like Manny Sanders tore his Achilles
that's fair.
At the end of the season. And then he comes back, plays more regular season games than anybody because of the midseason trade, makes his way to the Super Bowl. Mm. I get that Tannehill had a comeback.
And changed an entire organization.
Yeah, I just...
Well, how about we do a comeback player of the year roster and we just get one for every position? Because it seems like this one position where, or one award where there are a lot of candidates.
Yeah, there were a lot this year. Waller got some. Sanders did, I think, get a few votes, but he was pretty far below. I was a little surprised about Stephon Gilmore winning going away Defensive Player of the Year.
I like the methodology there because to me it seemed like it was almost like a defensive Heisman in that he was the most outstanding defensive player at his position. And the other guys, all the defensive linemen, they were kind of in a logjam.
Chandler Jones came in second in the voting.
That surprised me that he finished with more votes than T.J. Watt.
And then Watt was about a vote or two behind Jones. It was relatively close. But
are people not watching T.J. Watt? I mean, how does...
I think people are looking at sack totals. And I hate that because sack totals just don't tell us enough.
I think maybe people had made the decision early too because Devontae Parker torched Stephon Gilmore at the end of the season.
Well, that's what I thought he was maybe going to lose the award just because of that one game, but it did not happen that way. So shout out to Stephon Gilmore. Good job by him.
Big winner, the Ravens, getting both coordinators back next year.
Yeah.
It seemed like one of them, if not both, might be gone.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't want to mess with anything with that team. I'm looking forward to watching them. Also on Saturday night, while they were giving out the awards, they did announce the new Hall of Fame class, headlined by Troy Polamalu. What do we think about this class? Edgerrin James gets in. Isaac Bruce gets in. Who am I forgetting?
Steve Hutchinson
gets in. And then who's the last one? The fifth.
Well, you named them. Steve Atwater, you named him.
Steve Atwater.
Yeah, Atwater.
You hit all is the final one. Yeah. Any hot takes out of this, Claybon?
It's not super hot. I mean, you made a good point about Torrey Holt being the guy that you thought about on that Rams team. And I think he gets in. And when you look back, like all of these multiple Super Bowl playing teams, not that they won multiple Super Bowls, but it seems like eventually most of the good players on the roster get in.
It suddenly seems like next year, though, is really loaded, and it starts getting more loaded after that, where it's like Megatron and Peyton Manning and a couple other guys, where like every year now, it seems like there's some big names jumping in.
Well, and it's people we covered and grew up with and
that's
lived
true.
With.
That's
true.
Isaac
there's
Bruce.
That too.
It's more of a sign of our increasing march towards death.
I hate to, you know, you don't like to discount a guy who just made the Hall of Fame, but I don't know. People watching Isaac Bruce during his career, I don't know. Like at no point was he considered the better receiver compared to Torrey Holt, and I wouldn't have thought he was a top five receiver. I think Richard Seymour and Tony Boselli, who have been in the top 10 now, which means they got close to getting in, will get in eventually, and I think they deserve it. Seymour was easily the best defensive player that played for those Patriots teams. And I think Boselli, I'd rather have that like dominance guy has a little shorter shelf life.
My one question, because I love Polamalu getting in right away, as he deserved. No, there's just no drama around that. We knew that would happen. But Steve Atwater, I feel like I've seen like 35 NFL films about Steve Atwater and like the hardest hitting safety and Broncos anchor, and he retired before the turn of the century. It's like, why does it take so long for some of these guys to get it? Why now? Why now is there a push for? I'm glad he's in. I would have thought this could have happened a decade ago.
I think it's like politics and timing. It sometimes is who's fighting for you. I think they knew Atwater was going to be off the list pretty soon. He was reaching the point where he would not even have been considered. And like the PR hit, like the Jaguars did a great job. I think really the Boselli train, like it was getting really loud in this year. And I think it probably was effective. And then it's like, there's politics. I don't know. You hate it.
There's three contributors along with two coaches and a laundry list of seniors getting voted in.
Right.
This ceremony is already 7 or 8 hours long. Like,
yeah,
how do you keep this from being like a music festival, like 3 days of just
speeches? We're talking about the modern era inductees, which is the normal five that get in. But yes, this was the expanded class of 100, NFL 100 expanded class where an extra, 20 people got in? So
I would start this ceremony in mid-July and just let it run until August 10th.
There's no presenters this year, right? So that helps.
That's only like a couple minutes, though. So. Yeah.
But I mean, it adds up if they had 20 presenters.
Yeah.
Would you like to hear about my serendipitous encounter?
Oh, yeah.
At the airport bar?
Yes.
With an Inner Circle Hall of Fame member.
Who we got?
We've got an 80-year-old handsome, tall man sitting next to me. I'm eating my chicken salad sandwich, reading a book, minding my own business. He pulls out this little baggie full of vitamins and drugs. And he's like, I gotta take all of these today.
Legal drugs.
Right after he had finished like a sweet, very encouraging 10-minute conversation with his wife of 47 years. And I was just like, what a nice, nice, old, handsome man. and we talk about the bag of drugs. I was like, oh, yeah, a couple years ago I had to like create a spreadsheet for all my drugs. I get it. And he's like, yeah, Marlon Olsen told me this. And I'm like, who am I talking to? So about halfway through this hour and a half long conversation about life and football, I find out I'm talking to Bob Lilly, Mr. Cowboy, arguably the greatest defensive tackle of all time before Aaron Donald arrived on the scene. And he was the nicest man, the nicest, most down-to-earth guy.
That's awesome.
What an encounter.
He says a lot about you, that you would have like a half-hour conversation with this guy. It's just it was a very West story. Like, it was the three of us, me, you, and Dan, we're all on the same flight. We all, went to go try to look for stuff in the gift shop or whatever. We went our own ways. And Dan and I aren't having that hour and a half conversation with Bob Lilly. Like, if you had to,
Dan takes a total stray bullet out of nowhere.
All right. I would never have that conversation. I would, but I just, if I had to guess which one of the three of us that would have happened to. It was going to be you.
A very Wesleyan item.
I think it happened because I didn't push him to talk about football. And he didn't really, I think he appreciated that I knew who he was, but I wasn't like, oh, Bob Lilly, will you please sign this or something,
He's someone that I don't know much about other than what you say, that I think a 7 or 8 first team All Pro, that if they had a special like Hall of Fame for just the top, 30 guys, 40 guys, he would be in that Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And here's what was cool. He's 80 years old, and he's got all these vitamins and pills. One rolls off the table, and he snatches it like Karate Kid with the chopsticks. And he's like, I never did lose my reflex.
See, that's like back when Claibon supported the Cowboys. Little known fact.
Well, Claibon might not have been alive yet.
A closet Cowboys.
I don't think I was here.
Yeah, but at least you respect their history and stuff. That's
what do you mean?
You were a Cowboys fan, and you try to hide it now. You try to hide it.
I'm doing a great job of hiding it, let me tell you.
You weren't hiding it very well when J.J. Wilcox was playing for
him. No,
well, that was just somebody who appreciated defensive back play. Apologies to J.J.
All right.
You're out there not
Erlen Olsen's sneaky good on Little House on the Prairie, by the way.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good actor.
So maybe that's something for me to improve upon this offseason. We should switch to our segment. That like I could be the type of person like Wes that's curious enough about other people and has a gentle enough nature that I could just start up conversations with random handsome men and see what happens.
I would do exactly that. Right down to
let the record show that he struck up the conversation, not I.
I'm skipping past Afternoon Delight. We've gone 40 minutes on this on this news. I want to go right to the segment, which is our great idea, because I think we all are flawed flawed people. I mean, everyone is, but especially us. You know, and there's a lot of areas for improvement we can look to this offseason. Let's start with Mark Sessler, I think, talking about one area of growth. I guess you could throw it out for yourself or an NFL player.
I'll start with an NFL one.
We'll mix it all up, sure.
I'm going to start with an NFL one. I had a number of these, but this one actually, I don't want to fabricate something that I don't really care about if it happens or not. This is one that I absolutely care about a lot, and it bothers me, and it's a league item. And it's something that would improve, in my world, football immediately. And that is the rules around uniforms. And I would say use this offseason and before the league meetings to lift this obnoxious 5-year holding pattern for, we can each right now in our head, visually, and if you're listening, think of a team or two whose uniforms got changed in the last 5, 6, 7 years and were awful. And they're stuck with them for half a decade under league rules. I would blow that up and say, if you get involved with a uniform that you realize 2 or 3 weeks into the season is just an eyesore, and it looks awful under the early autumn sun, and it looks bad in the snow, and it looks bad under dome lights, and it looks bad in the daytime and bad at night, you have the ability and the opportunity, because you are dealing with a multi-million dollar marketing empire if you're one of these NFL teams, to pull the switch, have multiple uniforms, and get rid of past mistakes as quickly as possible. These decisions are typically made.
I know where this is coming from, a personal place.
Well, it is personal, but beyond what Cleveland did, and they're changing theirs, and they better get it right because it's another 5-year and contract you're stuck in. But think about, this is just personal, and no offense to the teams, but the Bucks have had hard uniforms to look at. The Jaguars here and there, they improved theirs to some degree. I mean, there's no end to it. There are some teams out there that the matchups between these two are, you cannot fathom it on television. And Greg at times is lucky to deal with a version of colorblindness. Let's work on this immediately. This is not that hard to do, because more uniforms, more options, more jerseys. Tell me anyone who loses here.
You're right. I know that the hoops that you have to go through to do new uniforms are crazy. Like, the Rams are trying to come out with some new uniforms as they move into the new state. It's like, why not just let teams make as many uniforms as they want and change it all the time?
Is it for the fans that buy them? Right, they don't want, you know, little Timmy to get stuck with this.
Is it
with this Richard?
Blowing up color.
Right,
schemes.
You can even like keep the old. Like, how about just have as many extras as you want, like the NBA. Like, what's the downside? Chaos. Let's have it.
Right.
I'm all for chaos. Let's do it. Don't take me as
why well, have so many rules. Anti-chaos. All right, Wes, an area of personal growth, or you know, an NFL player.
Well, I have a theme that carries across both my own personal growth.
Wow.
Oh.
The goal that I have for the future, plus what someone in the NFL needs to do, and it's chop wood, carry water. Baker Mayfield, chop wood, carry water. Make the main thing, live in the moment. This is a guy who did not make the main thing last year. You need to make football the main thing in your life again. And I heard some disturbing stories at the Super Bowl that I think he kind of lost his way last year, and it went beyond football. And I think this happens to a lot of athletes. You have to find a way to have the motivation to make football the main thing. Do you want to be great? Because I believe Baker Mayfield can be great. I think we saw it his rookie year. Is that what you want foremost in your life, is greatness in football? And maybe it will make you an imbalanced human being. But for your career, what you're meant to do with the next 10 years of your life, make football the main thing. Make being great the main thing. Make sharpening your skills, honing your skills to raise your level to the other quarterbacks above you, make that the main thing.
I couldn't agree more, and I think that some of the stuff we were hearing made a lot of sense, because it did seem like Baker Mayfield's wasn't just confidence, it was just sort of the way he presents himself and sort of what fuels him, got thrown in a blender last season. And there were some interesting comments from Jarvis Landry that I tweeted yesterday that came through a different interview and a different source, where he basically said that team was in such disarray that on a weekly basis, when they ran through their first 15 scripted plays, that no one on the offensive side of the ball had any concept of what would come next, that there was a lack of a plan. And I can't think of a worse environment for a second-year quarterback to be in. So there's that part of it, but what did he do to get himself out of that? I don't know the answer to that, but we need to see more.
When your whole game is built around slights and chips on your shoulder, it's easy to get caught up in creating those for yourself, adding more fuel to the fire than needs to be there.
And it's hard for us to figure out what it is, right? From a perception standpoint, it's like, well, is this because of mindset? Is this because of Freddie Kitchens? Is this because of Odell Beckham Jr.? And there's no way to know when they're losing and they look bad, you know, on the other 55 plays of the game after the first 15. And so it's tough. It's tough for Baker. It's tough for us to understand. And I think, like, for me, looking from the outside, at a certain point, what if he's just not good? I'm not there yet, but that's where you eventually get to.
Yeah, it was an erratic season that was hard to diagnose. To Wes's point, I think it's one of the great challenges of being a professional athlete. To your point, Wes, then these are what your next 10 years are about. It's a very common thing to not have all your ducks in a row in terms of, I want to be the greatest professional that I can be at the age of 23 or 24. None of us were like that. You know what I mean? Like, it forces you to mature a lot faster. Like, that was not what was the most important thing in my life when I was 24, is to do the best job I possibly could for my employers.
That's all true, but he has.
I was pretty okay with being mediocre at
the time.
That's
fine, but you're missing a very important thing.
Right.
Baker Mayfield found his calling. He is driven to be a great football player. You didn't know at 23, 24 that this is the one thing in life. This is my prime directive, to do this.
That's true.
He does, and that counts for a ton.
That's true. Once Roto World tapped the shoulder.
Motivation.
I really did. I really did. I suddenly was like, okay, this is it. Now I need to try hard before they take this away. Claybon.
I'm looking at a league that obviously I care about. I've worked here for a while now. But I think the message that they send, and it's random, and I think it's small, but it expands out to me, is how teams can avoid mandatory inclusion for Hard Knocks.
Hmm.
And the message sent there is, if media has access, if you have exposure, then that hurts you in some way. It's bad. It's a distraction. And so what we end up with is, right before the season starts, we promote a team that is bad, right? The rules state that you have to be bad to be on Hard Knocks. And it comes at a time where we're trying to gin up excitement for the season. And yeah, it gives us exposure to teams that we might not have been talking about. But it lays this foundation that, well, you know, if cameras are there, if people are talking about you, if people know your rookies better, if they see them sing, if they see your GM in meetings, if they see your coach in meetings, that hinders your ability to win football games. And it doesn't. The reason teams lose on Hard Knocks is because they're not any good.
They're
just not. If they were better,
I think the Antonio Brown thing set Hard Knocks back a bit. Like, that was just a bad road to go down. I mean, they couldn't have guessed everything that would have happened.
None of us could,
obviously, but they leaned into it, and it was unfortunate. I'm looking, the Eagles did all or nothing. They're obviously a successful organization. I don't know if that's out already, but it's coming out soon. That could be interesting. It would be nice to see a better team on Hard Knocks. Do it, Patriots. I think it goes to the point of, like, the NFL and most major sports are reducing access. They're always reducing it.
But
they're not adding to it. It's like there's a lot more access in the NFL than there is in the Premier League and a lot overseas. They think, wow, you guys have crazy good access. Like, at some point, you might have just about nothing.
I mean, there are 31 teams that might be strong-armed into it in a different set of rules. Then you travel down another 10,000 feet, and there's the Patriots. So,
but
you are wishing against wish.
Right, the thing is, the Patriots have all kinds of access. Like, we've seen Do Your Job 60 billion times.
Yeah.
Right? There's those practice clips of Belichick we see run into the ground.
The two Patriots docs on Belichick where they followed him for a whole season, the 2009 season. But ultimately,
Hard Knocks is chaos, though. Hard Knocks can – you're not quite – you. Although teams can control what they let out.
I'm going to go I'll throw out an NFL one next, but I'm going to go personal growth here. Every family ultimately, or every marriage, needs somewhat of a type A person that can make some plans. And the problem in my family is, me and my wife, we're both very chill, and that's good. It leads to a house without a lot of drama, but sometimes it leads to a house where nothing happens. No plans are made. You never go anywhere. You never do anything. You never create some good moments for your children to have. And you do. You know, sometimes those moments are just walking to the park and walking home from school and doing all sorts of stuff. But someone needs to step up to the plate and make some plans and go on some trips this offseason. And that, you know, someone is going to be me. We're going to SeaWorld on Saturday.
There it is.
I like
and
that.
And just generally, it's
get
like,
an
okay,
agenda going
I need
here.
To I need to start taking the reins here because these kids are just getting older and nothing's happening. It's like I'm in awe of like these parents and even thinking back to my parents of like they schedule all these vacations and they do these things. And I look at our and it's like nothing ever scheduled because we don't really like think ahead. We're always just like there. And it's like, oh, what are we going to do today or this weekend?
It's hard to fly by the seat of your pants if the object at rest stays at rest.
Right, exactly. And when children get involved, someone needs to start making some plans. So that's just my personal
I like that one.
Goal.
I like that.
Growth. Let's go, Mark.
All right. I will give you, because I'm sure the show is getting beefy, I'll give you a couple quick hit personal ones. Number one, outside, this happened this morning, and this driving me absolutely nuts in my house. Our fire detector, our smoke detector is located right outside the shower, the bathroom. And it does not tell the difference between smoke, because there's never smoke in my house, and the mist that comes from when I like my shower is really hot. And like the smoke and the mist is coming out of the bathroom and setting off the fire alarm all the time. And so I've got to figure out how to fix this. And I don't even know how to take the thing off the wall. I'm not good at that stuff. Greg doesn't have a toolbox. I have one. I have no idea where it is. So it's not that different. Got to fix that thing. Number two, at some point in this offseason, I'm not going to tweet for 40 straight days.
Yes.
I'm done with Twitter. And it's just basically a look at me show most of the time. And I'm going to go on a huge like 40-day Twitter fast. And then last year, I went 10 days into this and then faltered. But I'm going to do this experiment again. And this is not for everyone, but it is for me, where you eat nothing but watermelon for 21 days. And what happened to me after 10 days was I felt younger and happier than I have since like middle high school. And so I'm going to try it, the full 20-day experiment, and see what happens to me. I will live. These are random things.
You felt great, but the people around you.
No, I knew. You know what? I even wrote a note. Greg is going to talk about your moods. You weren't even around me. It was a staycation, and I honestly could not have been any happier. And every time I bring up a diet experiment, Greg's like, but your moods. Like, I'm going to be moody no matter what, so you're totally wrong about that one.
I'm just saying, like,
I knew that was coming.
You're happy on the inside, and you're just like, hey.
No, it's
hey,
honestly,
Daddy, can we watch? Shut up.
No, it's not like that. That's probably happening.
I haven't eaten in 20 days.
No, that's probably happening all the time as it is, and so I want to work on my overall moodiness too, because I am very moody around the house at times. That's a side bet to that.
Do you have a bathroom fan?
I just opened the window to our yard.
Because the bathroom fan is to expel moisture from the bathroom, whether it be flatulence or shower mist. So if you have one.
I mean, it sounds like a good idea for many reasons, but I got to feel I'll take this smoke alarm thing off. Give me a break. Just let the house burn
down. Let's go behind the glass. We forgot Erica Tamposi, our producer, is going to contribute here. What are you looking for in terms
for personal growth? Yeah, I really want to put, I know this sounds crazy, but like a lot more research and really get to the bottom of all the football stuff. I was really, really lucky to get to do a fantasy football show this year. And I feel like I've learned so much just by producing you guys every week and all the stuff that you guys take. And you know, Greg, I know you were joking, but even yesterday on the street, you were like, I'll ask you about personal, but nobody cares about your football opinion. And it is true, but like, I don't want to just be,
I mean, that was a joke.
Of course, but it has truth. I mean, it has legs because it is true in a sense where I want to be taken seriously. I don't want to just be the funny, you know, wild, loose cannon girl that you guys can do for comedic relief. Like, I do know my shit, and I want to
have to beep yourself. That's a first.
Yeah, no, it's probably not, actually.
But I can tell you it's hard to be on a show where your football opinion is not taken seriously ever.
Oh.
It can be a struggle.
Yeah, well, I want to study more, and I want to prove that I do know what I'm talking about. And I want to get better.
That's a good.
You're
going to
do it.
One. That's great.
Going to do it. A+.
I felt like that was my first couple of years doing Roto-World and stuff. The off seasons were super valuable for that, like reading books and like trying to, because it's the hardest sport. I mean, we say this all the time. It's the hardest sport to cover. There's the biggest gap between what the people on the field and the coaches know and the fans of any sport. It takes a long time to realize you don't even know anything. Like it takes 5 years to know how little you truly know.
I've come to that juncture.
Well, there's also fits and starts where it's like fog and you shine your bright lights on it and it's more opaque. It's harder to see. Yeah. So you have to kind of reach a point where you're like, oh, yeah. I don't really know that much. I got to know more. And then you know more and you're like, I still don't know that much. I got to know
more. But that
makes
it exciting too, I think. Makes it more like, I don't know. I think it makes it a better sport to cover.
And that's the ideal spot to be in, is to know, but know that you don't know everything.
Right.
And I think a lot of the stuff, bad stuff about covering football comes from people trying to pretend like they know.
Right, exactly.
Very ponderous.
There's so many people that
saying things as if they're certain and they're just not.
What do you think the easiest sport is to cover? Football.
Baseball.
Really? I couldn't write. I don't know that much about baseball at all. Someone threw me in to suddenly call a baseball game. I mean, it would be an absolute nuclear disaster.
Out of baseball, basketball, and football, baseball's the easiest.
That's what I'm saying. Of the four, I'm talking
about bowling.
Four major sports. Well, yeah.
Cover bowling with my eyes closed. How is that harder than baseball?
Are you still calling hockey a major sport?
I don't know. All right, let's throw tennis and golf in there. Whatever. No, who is covering bowling full time?
I'm just saying.
How many of those gigs are out there?
Baseball
has
like
one. Is there one person covering bowling full time?
There's got to be.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah,
it's got to be like.
For who?
Because people are making money bowling. People are making. ESPN covers it. I mean, it used to be.
They do, but that's
ESPN 6
or whatever. I don't know if that's a full time job. If you're out there covering bowling,
it's like, oh, he knocked down 9. Well, that means, guys, in this next shot, he's got to get one more down.
Let me know.
I think probably to call all of them to
an
excellent level is equally difficult. I'll say that. Sports are fun. Go sports.
Go sports.
Wes, how about you?
I have to make my Lieutenant Dan-like peace with my creator and mortality, and it's been hanging over my head for a couple of years. And that's why I mentioned chop wood, carry water, the old Zen koan about enlightenment and being in the moment. And not being afraid to go back down to the basics and tap into that. And it also, for me, has another meaning. All of that, I have to figure that out. But also, what I've become after cancer is I really like cooking and grilling. I've always liked it. But for whatever reason, I'm more driven to do it now. And I have this vision in the future of a barbecue and blues joint where I can surround myself with family and friends, the people I want to be around. Because I don't want to be around a lot of people. But to me, the key to life is be around the people you do want to be around. And if I can open that up, if I can create one new signature dish every year, last year I created about 4 or 5, so I got a head start. Mm-hmm. So this year I create another one. Keisha wants a YouTube project called It's Over for the Westlings, because everyone keeps telling us you can't have fun once your parents.
That's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You guys are so naive. You think you'd still be the fun, cool people. Well, it's over for us. So that's kind of like our ironic take on it. But she wants me to have a grilling station on our YouTube channel. So I'm going to chop wood, carry water. The wood is, I mean, that's what barbecue is. Indirect heat with wood fire and water from the sous vide that I've been into. So something to do with that. So I got to figure out how all that works together and then weave fatherhood into it for the first time. So I've got a lot of changing to do this offseason.
You guys are going to crush it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't think it's over.
A lot going on.
Fatherhood, yeah, we'll be coming to you, you know. You just are going to be reacting to that. That's that's a beautiful thing. And I mean it kind of goes I hear what you're saying. You're like, it's very wise words what you're saying. And life is about creating like those moments. That's partly why I'm trying to force myself to make plans, because like sometimes those moments happen when you get out of your comfort zone, which is, you know, your own house. But to your point, like having different passions outside of this job is important.
I also think the Wes of 2020 is going to have an easier time shifting into the rigors and delights of parenthood than if the Wes that I met in like 2013, if suddenly you had a child like the next morning, you would have had some jarring scenarios to work on.
That person was a bad decision-making machine.
Yeah, we've scared you too much about, like, it's more that, like, Keisha has, like, a very specific agenda of a lot of these things. It's like, well, Tuesday nights, we're going to be doing this, and, like, Friday nights, you know, and you, who knows, you know.
She's a scheduler.
She is that person. Like, you don't have that worry in your household in terms of schedule. I'm going to throw out mine next, because now I realize saving the football one was a bad move, because, like, we should have just closed on that or close on whatever Claybon's got. That's what we're going
to
do. My area, just quickly, of an NFL figure that can can grow personally is for Ryan Pace and for Matt Nagy to just admit mistakes and move on from prior mistakes. Don't hold on. You know, we all make so many mistakes, but a lot more pain happens from holding on to those mistakes. And maybe don't let the Chargers go get Cam Newton. Maybe you be the team that it's a short life. It's a short career in the NFL. Make the most of it. You want to create some moments. Get Cam, or get someone else. There's a lot of quarterbacks that could be out there. It doesn't matter what you said publicly in December 31st. No one's going to mind when you deliver a real quarterback and they don't have one.
I think we all agree that that's what the Bears should do. But I, just as a thought exercise, how does that pain measure? The pain of making a bad decision and standing by it measure against the pain of Mitch Trubisky, and I don't know what the odds are, going to another franchise and succeeding wildly after you cut him and didn't give him another year.
Just as a thought exercise. Can't live life that way, worrying about...
But it is going to be pain if you see him in another uniform doing great things.
Well, I don't know why you couldn't bench him, too, if he lost a competition to a veteran in the summer. I mean, then you're protecting against that. I'd almost roll the dice on Mitch Trubisky not going somewhere else and turning into Aaron Rodgers also.
Yes.
I just don't see it. I've not seen it for two seasons. So.
Crazier things have happened.
They have.
Take that chance.
For me, just professionally and also personally, I have no problem being honest with people that I like. Like with you guys, honestly, with people on Twitter, I can do it easy. But when it comes to professionally, people that I want to like me, I'll fall back and say less. I'll cut my sentences short. I'll leave thoughts to myself because I don't want to hurt feelings. I don't want to create awkward circumstances, and it really sets me back. Because I look at the way, and not that I want to take things to the extreme and not to name names about anybody that works here. But
do though, please.
If something happens and it puts somebody in a bad position, those people will say something. Me, I tend to keep that to myself, and I'll burn myself, say, oh, you know, I should have been better prepared for that. But everything isn't my fault. You know, I'm role-playing the protagonist of existence. Like, I get that. But there are certain obstacles that get put in my way that I need to be a little more vocal about, and quit taking the easy way out. Because I do it in a lot of capacities, and sometimes I don't do it at all, and I always feel better when I don't do it. But I've just got to quit shortchanging myself, because you know, it's been a long year. Lost my mom right before the Super Bowl last year. I was doing Super Bowl Live. I did two blocks of the show after I found out it happened, and I'm still working in that chair all the time, and I'm thinking about all the times where I just get run over, you know, and I'm constantly playing dumb to make somebody else seem smart, or you know, just going through the motions, and I've got to quit doing that because it's a disservice to me. It's a disservice to the people that are watching. So no more.
You feel like you can be yourself with people you're comfortable around, but you want to be yourself with everyone.
Yeah, and a lot of the times that's me just listening and not saying anything.
Well, we all kind of do that a little bit. Like you change how much of yourself you give to another person depending on how well you know that person and how comfortable you are with
standing up for yourself too and for other people. Yeah. But letting them know in that situation.
And it's always easier for me to stand up for other people than it is for myself. And so I've just got to figure out a way. Not that I'm like, oh, you know, poor little Patrick, but like.
But you don't want to have those like a minute after the conversation ended and the other person walked out of the room. Oh, I should have said this.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, I should. Yeah.
I like that. I feel that way a lot, too.
This has been a deep.
I like all your goals.
Very cathartic.
Yeah, we did.
I know. Mine seemed pretty basic after you guys.
Patrick,
I don't care.
I got something for
mine
you.
Mine is detaching a smoke alarm.
I was like, I want to go to SeaWorld.
I was at a job before this at another TV show I was at, and it was nothing compared to what other people have gone through. But there was a guy that I worked with who would be joking with me and would say a lot of things that were really sort of inappropriate. And I'm talking crossing the line. But it was someone I worked with, someone that was like, it was always a joke. It wasn't outright. And I would go home and talk to my roommate or talk to people about it and be like, it's really upsetting me, but I don't want things to be weird at work. And I know it's like not compared to like what you're saying now, but you just said something that reminded me. So when I told that, they were like, what if I came home and said what this guy said to you? You would be so defensive. You would be like, hey, that's not cool. You can't talk to her like that, or you can't do this. So someone taught me something that I still am not good at doing it. But if you start looking at yourself as you're defending someone else, because when it's me, I'm not going to speak up. And I find myself really boisterous, really strong-headed and all this. But as soon as it comes to me where I'm worried about upsetting someone or don't want to make the mood weird, it's like, but wait, if someone was talking to Greg like that, or Mark, or Wes, or like, I would be, hey, this is not cool, and I'm not going to let it be cool. So it's like, if you try to put yourself in that situation where you're defending someone else, because it's crazy. We all would stand up for someone else, but when it comes to ourselves, it's completely different.
Because you're never worried about how the other person is perceived based on your response. But
right.
when you do it for yourself, it's like, I see, to, you know, go full disclosure, go kimono open, like Money and Siciliano have segments on the show that I started, you know, with
NFL,
Larry.
NFL with, Now.
Yeah.
Used to be Up to the Minute.
And like, I think about it, and I've never said anything. I've never said anything publicly. I've never said anything in a meeting. It's like, you know, I want to have something that I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes they don't know what you want, too.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, that's because I don't say anything. So it's just
this
like,
is very healthy.
You have to say something.
Yeah.
Otherwise, nothing's going to happen.
Maybe these Shadow League figures are listening to this episode right now, but I sort of doubt
it. If they see my name in the description, I can't.
Oh,
well,
stop.
Well, there's another aspect of this is, like, you, if you're good, you think, well, I shouldn't have to ask. They should recognize it and come up with the idea, hey, I want to feature this person here.
But we've learned that is not how this world works for the most part. Or the business.
It's not how NFL Network works.
That's not how the business works on some level. Unfortunately, that you do need to be your own advocate.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, sometimes. I wouldn't be here. We all wouldn't be here if you guys hadn't carved out this thing for yourself and just made it happen. So... got to make it happen.
Largely without oversight, which is a one way to go. I would say that's a...
That was a factor. The fact that, you know, nobody really cared what we were doing and the studio wasn't occupied, so let's go do it. Nobody
like,
cares anyway.
Like, yeah, sneak around. It is great sometimes being under the radar for a while. Yeah. And then you do not want to be under the radar. And we've gotten to that point. And that's why we can have these types of conversations. This is a very off-season show to me. It was a good way to kick off the off-season. We had some real football talk, but we had some talk, as Dave Damashek would say, about the little game of life, right? Is that what he says?
Well, he does.
I don't know why I wrote with the Sheck.
I don't know. He hadn't had me on the show in 3 years, so I don't know.
Oh.
No, you're talking up. I like this. You're...
I'm not going to give you a grade, and Dan, to me, is the perfect host, but it is healthy once in a while to hear a different voice and to take the show in a different direction and then come back to the stasis of what you always do the next show.
Sure. Well, that is, it's part of the fun of the off season, and we'll have lots of different combinations, lots of different types of shows. We can stretch our legs a little bit. We will be plenty busy with the combine we're going to in a couple weeks and owners meetings and free agency. We will be back next week for two shows, Tuesday and Thursday, before cranking it back up to three shows a week after that for a while. I know, Erica, you're excited about that. In the meantime, though, I think it's time. Let's get out of here. For Mark Sessler, the Sizzler, the Chef, Chris Wesseling, Patrick Claibon, and Erica Tamposi, I'm Greg Rosenthal. See you Tuesday.